stay tuned for the Dr. and Mrs. Future Show. Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. Ladies and gentlemen, KSCO presents the Dr. Future Show. If you would like to join in our show today, you can call us at 831-479-1080. That's 831-479-1080. And now, your host, Dr. Future.
Why do we never? Hey, folks. Happy New Year. Getting really close. Just a few hours away. It's already New Year's in some parts of this planet. We wish you a very happy New Year's. And we have a lot to share with you in the coming year about the futures of the 2020s.
And the good news is we're live. We're live now.
That's right.
We're live in the new year.
You can actually talk to us.
That's right. Lots of people are resting up for their holiday celebrations and invocations, but we're ready. We're looking forward to what I'm calling the Soaring 20s, a whole new decade of incredible advancement on planet Earth.
Yes, we've had some amazing New Year's in Santa Cruz already. Remember the 2000 New Year's?
Sure. That was fun. From Y2K to the new millennium.
Is that the one? Well, that 2000, actually, we were in Maui.
Right.
But the 2001.
In Santa Cruz at the Clock Tower.
Right.
First night. A great place to be.
Yeah, we did a video screen right next to the Clock Tower in downtown Santa Cruz, where we put up a movie that was a takeoff on the 2001 A Space Odyssey. Remember that film?
Right. It started with a little outtake from the movie. Shh, don't tell anybody. But we had the monkeys throwing that bone up in the air and having it spin and come back down as a spaceship. One of the great time cuts of all time.
Well, what we did is that instead of just turning right to the spaceship, which they did from the movie, where it jumped a few thousand years, we filled in the blanks. We put some images of the evolution of our species as the bone rotated. We went through
ancient skulls
and Egyptian evolution and the Middle Ages and
different eras,
steamboats and
conquerors and inventions
and taking us into
historical epochs.
And then there was big lasers. Pat Flanagan had big lasers.
That's right. We counted down right to the
on the clock tower
of the beginning of the millennium, and as the fireworks went off, our partner in crime, Pat Flanagan, began blazing laser light all over the clock tower.
That was fun. Yeah. I think I'm going to repost some of that video.
Yeah.
It was kind of funny. We had a big crowd downtown.
Yeah,
the clock
some of
tower
you may
always
have been
brings
there
a lot of people.
If you like to celebrate
it was
downtown.
Interesting. The police told us not to aim the cameras at the crowd after midnight.
People get too excited when they see pictures of themselves dancing
on the big screen. Right, so we couldn't put pictures of the crowd on the big screen, but we did show a little history of our species. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
So this year, it's a little different for us. We're actually doing more of a private New Year's at some dear friend's house, and it'll be fun.
That's right. This is going to be a kissing New Year's, where we'll have a big, long smooch and a glass of champagne and something like that.
We got contacted by our Carmel by the Sea friends. They're having a makerspace party at the makerspace in Carmel, where they'll be doing presentations on all the new tools that will be exciting makers for the next 10 years. They'll look kind of fun. Yeah, something for everybody out there.
Right. All the news of the end of the earth coming down upon us is just that. It's headlines meant to grab your attention. But the rest of the story is that people have never been more connected. They've never been more able to find their own interests and create their own realities in ways that serve them and make up some new rules for how society works.
Yeah, so we're pretty optimistic about things as they evolve, and we'll share with you some of the cool stories coming up. In fact, we'll do that now. We have also a special guest for the second hour live. You'll be able to actually talk to them. Randy Masters, a longtime Santa Cruzian, who is really super knowledgeable about the intersection of several fields, including music and sacred geometry and healing, generally sound healing, that sort of thing. So we'll look at some of those elements in the second hour.
Mm-hmm.
But right now, let's go a little bit into our news. I've got a few stories to share with you as to what's happening at the turn of the decade here. One is that China launched their largest rocket ever.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. They've got a new hardcore, their version of a Falcon 9 type rocket that will launch all their future missions. Kind of like in a Saturn V almost, you know, that we used for the lunar launches, but a little bit smaller. It's called the Long March 5Y3 rocket, and it took off from the Wenchang Space Launch Center in South China, carrying a Xinjiang 20 satellite last Friday night. That's pretty cool. It's a big 187 feet tall, 5 meters in diameter around its core stage, 4 boosters. What makes this really cool is that the two-stage rocket can carry a payload of about 25 tons into low Earth orbit.
Is that about 10 times more than anything that's gone before?
Well, no, but it's pretty good, right? Mm-hmm. It's a lot, 25 tons a lot. Alternately, it can carry 14 tons into geostationary orbit. That's where you would go if you want a satellite just to float over a particular area of the sky.
Oh, this is an interesting comparison. So it's displaced by fuel. The farther it has to go, the less weight it can carry.
Yeah, there are several core destinations that you want to go
when
you go into space.
So it can lift off with 25 tons. It can go to geostationary orbit 14 tons.
Yeah, that's one of the things you want to reach, you know, for a lot of commercial satellites is geostationary. And 14 tons is quite a bit. And then you also have what's called the Earth-Mars transfer orbit and the Earth-Moon transfer orbit. The Earth-Moon transfer orbit's a little further out, and it can only do 8 tons to there. And the Earth-Moon transfer point is where you can send stuff to the moon.
Right. You're past Earth's gravity, and you're turning it over to the lunar orbitals that are orbiting weightlessly or gravity-less around the moon.
So 8 tons to the Earth-Moon transfer orbit and 5 tons to the Earth-Mars transfer orbit. 5 tons to Mars.
I see.
Yes.
So 20 tons more fuel to get to Mars.
Yes. The Earth-Mars transfer orbit is an elliptical orbit called the Hohmann transfer orbit. And we're really taking advantage of that next year. There are many Mars missions next year, which we'll talk about after the break.
I see. So that's like the river, the gravity river that jets things to Mars.
Yeah. If you want to catch the transfer orbit to Mars, the Hohmann transfer orbit is what you do.
All right. Well, off to a great start for this New Year's Eve. And we're going to be right back after a few messages from people in our community.
Okay, welcome back to the show. We're live today on New Year's Eve.
Oh, it has already turned in Australia. My sister sent me some fireworks on a text message.
Oh, yeah,
she was observing at midnight.
Oh, good.
She was, I think, getting ready to get on a plane and come back. I think she's celebrating New Year's for a full 36 hours or
something. So it's probably already New Year's in India by now. And was it 8 hours? 8 hours to Europe. You're 8 hours behind us in Europe. So when we get off the air, it'll be celebrating in Europe.
Right. Yeah.
Meanwhile, let's look at some of the news we're excited about for 2020. Mm-hmm. NASA is returning to the moon. They have an aggressive program to come back by 2024. The Trump administration accelerated the timeline for Project Artemis, which is a lunar mission to land on the moon and get some samples and take off again, stuff we did in 1970.
Mm-hmm.
So it's gonna,
a whole new generation of NASA astronauts and technicians.
NASA says they need a lot more money to speed it up to 2024, though. So we'll see if Congress gives them the money for that.
Maybe Space Force will buy some space on one of their rockets.
Maybe. Yeah, maybe
Space Force just got funded, right?
That's true. NASA suggested it'll need $25 billion over the next 5 years, extra $25 billion. I think the entire Apollo program was $25 billion in 1969.
Over how many years?
Over 10 years, something like that.
Yeah. I remember when we first started the show, the NASA budget was something around $12 billion annually. Now they want $25 billion
to get to the moon.
You wonder where our tax dollars are going.
Well, not there. I mean, there's a lot more going into like fighter programs and Space Force and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. NASA's budget is less than 1% of the budget of the entire country. Mm-hmm. So it's not that huge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not saying it's a huge part of what the government spends. I'm just saying that everything is more expensive than it was when we started the show.
Yeah, that's true. So also there's some new missions to Mars that are happening. One of them is the Mars 2020 rover. It's still not named. Another is the ExoMars Rosalind Franklin rover and the Chinese Mars small rover.
Oh, there's going to be a bunch of rovers rove over and meet each other.
Yeah.
Red rover.
Yeah. They'll be launched in late July and early August to take advantage of the Holman transfer orbit. That's what we were talking about before the break.
Oh, so there's going to be some traffic on the Holman transfer orbit.
That's right. It's a 3-week launch window.
I wonder if there's going to be a race. I wonder if they're going to take over the Starman, you know, if anybody's going to get there faster than Starman.
Yeah, where is Starman right now?
I don't know. We should find
look him
out.
Look him up. Okay, He's out there somewhere.
I'll Google Starman.
So NASA's 2020 Mars rover will land in what's called the Jezero Crater, which will scour this former lake bed to search for signs of ancient microbial life. Looking to see if Mars ever supported microbial life as it is. The latest research suggests that it might have, but there's no evidence of actual life that's alive or dead on Mars yet. So Mars 2020 will help prove that. Some of the theories are that, well, it turns out that Mars was like the Earth 4 billion years ago. Mm-hmm. 4 billion years ago, it had water, it had an atmosphere, and it very well could have supported life as we know it. And then something happened, and it kind of lost its atmosphere and turned into the desert planet that it is today. And that whatever life was there may have made it to Earth. And if it was a microbial life, it would have made it to Earth through meteor impacts. Because meteors can hit Mars and knock pieces of Mars all the way to Earth. And if they landed in warm ponds of water near the volcanoes, which were basically what Earth was then, nothing but a molten hell world with some nice warm water ponds, then we could have helped keep Martian microbes alive, which would have evolved into us. Okay, what do you have here, Mrs. Future? The third orbit diagram of the solar system simulator.
It looks like the Starman Roadster is on the other side of the sun from us.
Somewhere way out there.
Well, here, can you see?
No.
This is the Roadster. Here's Mars. Here's us.
It's out there.
Yeah. So basically, if you look towards the sun, the Roadster is just a little to the right of Mercury. And if you go about...
But it's near Mars, though. It's way out there. It's not near Mercury's close in.
Well, I wouldn't say it's near Mars. I mean, look where Mars is. It's directly across the sun from us, and that puts it about, I'd give it a sixth of a Mars orbit arc to get from where it is to Mars.
But it's not near Mercury, though. It's
well, in terms of us seeing it, since it's a straight line, if we're sitting here on the Earth and we look from the Earth to the sun,
because it's on the opposite side of
the
sun,
right. There's Mercury. We see Mercury on the opposite side of the sun, and we keep going, and there's the Roadster.
Okay, well, very good.
Okay. How's that for the radio visualization project?
I don't know.
Does everybody know where to look for the Roadster now?
Yeah, we're going
to
look for something that we can't see. Yeah,
that's, the Roadster is between Mercury and Mars.
Enough on the Roadster.
There's a lot of Mercury.
Okay, good. Okay. I got enough on the Roadster to keep me happy for till next year. So back to some other data here. The European Rosalind Franklin rover, it will also be searching for signs of ancient life. And their landing site has not been chosen yet. And they're being taken up by Russia's Kazachuk lander. It will be deployed by parachute. Once it lands on Mars, it'll be coming down parachute. And they're having trouble with their parachutes.
Uh-oh. Yeah. So they haven't chosen where they're landing, and they have trouble with their parachutes.
Yeah, and they hopefully will try to figure this out before they miss the Holman transfer window.
This is what you call a cliffhanger.
Yeah, if they miss that window, it's a 26-month delay before the next opportunity.
Oh, dear.
To go to Mars.
They probably should have picked a landing spot before they left.
Yes. Well, that's the Euro-Russian link. And then there's the Chinese mission, which we know less about. But it reportedly involves an orbiter, a 530-pound rover, and 13 science payloads. Mm. That's according to Space News.
Mm-hmm.
And the orbiter will be equipped with a decent camera, super high res. And the rover will be able to do spectrographic analysis, among all kinds of other science-y type tasks.
Ooh, all right. Shine a light. Yeah. See what you got.
Well, a lot can be done through spectroscopy.
Mm-hmm.
A lot, just light, analyzing light, sending lasers into objects and looking at the light reflections.
Yeah, every element has a light signature.
The Chinese have chosen two preliminary sites near Utopia Planitia, but a final decision is still pending on that. Now, what's interesting also is there's another Mars mission going out for the to try to catch the Holman transfer window, and that's from the United Arab Emirates.
Oh, boy.
Right? The UAE. Okay. They're launching their, what they call their Hope Mars mission. They're hoping they get there. They're hoping. Uh-huh. The first one.
Oh, great. Yeah. So not only have they not picked their landing spot, they're not even sure they're going to land on that planet. They're hoping.
They're hoping. It'll be the first interplanetary mission from an Arab Islamic country.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll be launched aboard a Japanese rocket.
Oh, okay.
Okay, and once it's orbiting around Mars, their sat will study Martian weather and the reasons why Mars has been leaking so much oxygen and hydrogen.
Uh-huh.
You know, why doesn't it hold those gases in the atmosphere? Mm. They want to figure that out. And they're looking at connections between the upper and the lower atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how they are. They're very atmospherically oriented.
Sure. Yeah, people want to know if we can live on Mars, so we got to know if we can breathe on Mars.
Well, you can't breathe on Mars. That's a fundamental fact.
You have to bring your own breathing apparatus.
Yes. Yeah, it's mostly carbon dioxide.
I see. So you'd have to mutate significantly.
Or change the atmosphere significantly.
Right. In the old nuke Mars tradition.
Yeah.
Make it more habitable for humans.
If you nuke Mars on the North and South Poles, there's so much water there that it would turn into an atmosphere.
And then it would leak and leave the planet.
Well, that's why the UAE...
And we'd be stuck again.
Well, the UAE is studying that. They want to see if it'll hold it.
You know, Pachamama would not approve of us nuking another planet.
Well, you know...
Not even... We shouldn't even approve of nuking our own planet, much less another defenseless planet.
We are very smart.
What a bad neighbor.
Smart, crazy monkeys. What can you say? You know, who else thinks of this stuff?
Well, thinking doesn't mean that doing is a good idea.
No. And you naturally, you don't... If you find other life there, you wouldn't want to destroy it for us.
That's true.
But if there's no other life there, then it's like... In many people's minds, it's tabula rasa. It's just there for us to play with and to see what we can do. And something of the size of a planet could be very good for us.
But it's much easier to think in terms of a habitat level of oxygen for us to breathe or enough air for our body rather than for the whole planet, right?
It makes more sense to have like domes. Have domes and underground habitats.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, what's the ideal size shelter, right? Do you want to be in a 10 by 10 room or do you want to be in a 1,000 square foot dome or do you want to expand beyond that?
What's interesting about our rover, which I'll get into more detail after the break, is that we're going to be exploring it far more than just little ground machines, which are fantastic, by the way. I like rovers, but it has a drone on board.
Your favorite.
Yes, and the drone will be able to cover much more territory and land and look at things and bring things back to the rover for analysis.
Including movies.
Yeah, for us to look at from here.
You think they're going to have any remote control for the drones so people
absolutely.
Back on Earth can
do it? No, but they need autonomous control, though, because it takes like 16 minutes for a radio signal to reach it. So the drone is autonomous. It needs to be.
Okay.
In order to fly properly. You can give it directions in advance and hit go and hope for the best. Yeah, it's quite fascinating, the whole 2020 rover thing that we're putting on. NASA's probably going to be very successful with this one. Welcome back to the show. We're just going over some of the new stuff going up in space next year or tomorrow, begins next year. And one is the Mars 2020 rover, which will be heading out next July. 2021 is we'll actually be getting a lot of data on that. The Mars 2020 rover will be the fifth U.S. rover to land on Mars. It takes 7 months to get there.
Hmm.
7 months using the Hohmann transfer.
Mm-hmm.
Now, among the devices on board our rover are 23 cameras. 23 cameras.
Hmm.
Two ears.
Ears?
Ears. And we're going to listen to Mars. Like the winds.
Uh-huh.
That kind of stuff. And, of course, lasers. We must have lasers.
Ooh, yes. We have cameras, lasers, and audio phones.
Lasers for chemical analysis.
Mm-hmm.
Spectrographic analysis. Be able to do that. Yeah, I think we should use those here, too, more. Like, people are always worried about the trails in the sky. So, is that really natural? Those chemtrails, like a couple days ago, there were a lot up here. But if we could aim a laser at them and get an analysis, we could solve that problem.
Mm-hmm.
But we'd rather think it's some conspiracy. You know, it's funny. I'd really like to see us
use
NASA technology to look at chemtrails.
Right.
So anyway, they're going to have lasers on board. Maybe we should get a couple extra ones that NASA is not sending up and use it for analyzing our own atmosphere a little bit. Anyway, that's there.
Hey, NASA, could you send us some of your extra test lasers and we'll point them at the contrails?
Or at least the plans for them. I want to see how it works. So the Mars 2020 is about the size of a car.
Mm-hmm.
It's got six wheels and it's not super fast. It can only cover about 200 yards per day.
That's really slow.
200 yards.
I wonder how fast a snail goes.
It's all new, right? So you don't have to go that far to find
right.
new stuff.
Uh-huh.
It's fueled by a miniature nuclear reactor.
Oh. It must be really tiny if it's only going that fast.
Miniature, yes.
Yeah. It's only shooting out one ion per second, right?
I think it's a little better than that. It's got a lot of stuff on board, all right? It's got,
everything
just
else
wheels.
Is charging the batteries.
It's got 7 foot long articulated arms and a drill, and so it can crack open rocks.
Sounds dangerous.
Yeah. You can look inside rocks. The geologists love that, their little pick hammer.
Mm-hmm.
It gives you a deeper analysis of what you're seeing.
Do you have a picture of it?
Yeah, I have it up on linked on our page, drfutureshow.com/links, and you can see all this stuff firsthand. One of the things they're looking for is ancient microbial life, billions of years ago. You know, when 4 billion years ago, when the planet was more Earth-like.
Mm-hmm.
We're looking for old stuff, so that might be inside rocks.
Oh, boy. So I'm looking at this. This is a really new look for a rover. It doesn't look like anything like Curiosity or Opportunity.
Bicycle tires almost, right?
Yeah. This is a real Rube Goldberg contraption here. It looks like a robot on six bicycle wheels. It looks like it has a robot arm up front with a video camera that it can just lift up and down and point all around.
Oh, yeah. It's a real explorer vehicle. And also, it'll take samples. It'll crack open rocks and it'll find samples of things. And it will then put them into little hermetically sealed tubes.
Hmm.
And then it'll leave them on the surface for a future mission to pick them up and take them back to Earth.
Mm-hmm. I like when it doesn't feel like being on wheels, it just lifts the wheels up and it puts down its four little feet and it looks like a car jack and it just jacks the whole rover up.
Sometimes you get stuck. So you're able to jack up the whole. It's like having a winch on the front of your truck.
Yeah, they're finally sending some rescue materials with the rover so they can get themselves out of some craters.
Mm-hmm. So they're hoping that they'll get funded for a 2026 mission. We'll be able to pick up all the samples and fly them back here.
Mm.
NASA FedEx style.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it only takes 7 months to deliver it back after waiting 3 years. 5 years, and then 7 months travel.
Wow. So how is the rover supposed to get back? Is there a launch
vehicle? Oh, it doesn't.
Vehicle?
It leaves samples. It stays there. We leave it there,
uh-huh.
and it collects samples, and then it leaves the samples for a future mission to pick up and take back to Earth.
Okay.
That's how it works.
It's collecting samples. It's not actually sending them back.
It's not preparing. It's not firing them in a little rocket tube or anything.
I was going to say, that's pretty advanced.
Yeah, that would be good. We'd get them all back, analyze it. So right now we're going to a dried up delta called Jezero which was selected after a lot of scientists debated this. It used to be a 500-yard deep lake connected to a network of rivers 4 billion years ago. And it's about a 30-mile crater. They hope there's some evidence of preserved organic molecules there. And they're also preparing for human missions. They think of it as like the first human precursor mission to Mars. The equipment that they're sending will allow us to make oxygen there and to see whether or not we can make oxygen from the materials available there. And if so, then that will be good for us because we breathe oxygen. And to be able to make it there indigenously would be great. So the fuel, the departure to Mars, that's the other thing. It's a good idea to be able to create your fuel there as well. So if you can do food or water and fuel, food, water, and fuel, then we're pretty much handled.
All right, hydrogen, carbon, and oxygen. That's all we need.
Yeah, so that's the Mars rover, our Mars 2020. And NASA has a great record in being able to send stuff there and actually getting there and working. So we're very happy about that.
Yeah, there have been some just amazing missions to Mars. I loved the one that they sent with the inflatable bags, the ones that are in cars that they recalled.
Like the Opportunity and...
Yeah, when they landed, they had all of these crash balloons that, you know...
Right, big balloons that protected them.
That protected them, so they bounced a while and then finally landed and then deflated the balloons and rolled out.
Yeah, that was pretty cool, huh?
Yeah.
The larger one, the Curiosity, didn't go that way. It was too heavy for that kind of landing procedures. Oh. They had to use a rocket retro to land it properly, and a winch. It was really quite interesting movie on that.
Right. A launch vehicle, a landing vehicle. The rockets are firing while this little line gets lowered down and the vehicle grounds.
Yes. Okay, so let's look at a couple other things happening. Coming up, the Chinese Chang'e 5 is going out there. And it's the latest installment in the Chinese Lunar Exploration Program. And it will be landing next year as well. And it will consist of a lander and rover. It will have lots of instruments to study the surface of the moon. It'll also be China's first sample return mission. So they'll be looking at sending stuff back from the moon.
Now, are they going to be launching the samples off the moon, or are they going to be waiting for another vehicle to pick them up later?
That's a good question. There's no information on that yet, exactly how they're getting it back. Though I would imagine it's a lot easier from the moon to be able to send a rocket to launch a return from the moon. So you have a lander, and then you have an ascent vehicle, as we call it at NASA, to return it back into lunar orbit and then Earth after that. So that's going up next year as well, as well as the Japanese program, the Hayabusa 2.
Oh. Doesn't the Hayabusa, did they explore asteroids?
That's right, yeah. That's an asteroid mission from June of 2018. Remember Bruce Damer talked about that a little bit? He just came back from Japan talking about that whole project. And they rendezvoused with Ryugu, the asteroid.
Ryugu.
The mission surveyed the asteroid using a series of robotic landers and obtained samples from the surface. In November, Hayabusa 2 left orbit around Ryugu and began making its way home. So in late 2020, it will return to Earth with samples of the asteroid.
Okay.
And then that'll help us understand a little bit more about the evolution of the solar system, formation information, and evolution after that.
And proof that it's much easier to go explore an asteroid and bring stuff back than it is to explore a satellite, a moon, a planet. All right. Hey, would you like to say hi to Colonel Terry?
Colonel Terry, Happy New Year, Colonel Terry.
Hi.
Likewise, lucky husband and beautiful smart lady.
You always make me smile.
You always bring a smile to me, and you convince me that women probably are the smarter of the species.
Well, we all have our moments.
Yeah, I just love comparing my intelligence with my wife's.
Well, I'm sure it's hard for you to keep up. And you're not so, you know, you're in pretty good shape.
Yeah, we don't compete. You know,
no, we don't. No, we cover different areas. Yeah. I'm very grateful for my husband's knowledge of the world and the universe. I learn a lot from him.
I compliment you very highly for the excellent work you do program after program, preparing them on so many interesting and erudite topics.
Well, thanks. Do you like the space stuff? You enjoy our space news?
You know, all the new technology, the computer innovations and so forth. I mean, right. It's all part of our collective human population journey.
That's true, yeah. Yeah, it is quite an exciting time. I do feel it's a true renaissance that's unfolding here.
I would agree with you, yeah. But unlike the prior renaissance, are we going to survive much longer?
Well, it's always the case. Our species is always on that brink of mass planetary extinction or some kind of mass planetary awakening.
Yeah, I would just like to put it out this way. In terms of a democratic vote, if every single person born is voting for the future, I'm guessing way, way more of them are voting for the future to continue than those very few nut jobs who are voting for the future to end in some horrible, tragic way that is avoidable.
Well, so. Unfortunately, both parties are stupid about that big picture. The Democrats are stupid about the realities of overpopulating the planet and encouraging people to do so, contrary to the Dalai Lama's observations, which are available on YouTube, where he says to the Third World, why do you overbreed children you know you can't care for and add to the world's suffering? He also says, this is the big reality. We don't have more space and resources for all of us to live as we'd like to. Reality from a very compassionate man, whom I know personally in a 90-minute conversation decades ago.
Mm. He is a lovely being.
Wisdom
he does say wise, wise things.
Wise man in the big picture.
Okay. And listen, we have to go to a break for a moment. Do you want to hold on a sec, Colonel?
I wanted to say, and then complimentary things about, and the Republicans, of course, are stupid about what they're stupid about. I'll hold, but I want to leave it on a joyful note.
Oh, good.
Okay, I'll wait for you.
Okay, thanks. Alrighty, welcome back to the Dr. and Mrs. Future Show. We got Colonel Terry on the line with some New Year's message for you all. Take it away, Colonel.
Okay. Well, first of all, let us commit to respecting reality.
Respecting reality. Okay. That's what I have on my wall. Visit reality. It's a very nice poster.
And the reality we deal with is we're all populating and polluting our dear planet.
Mm.
That's a reality. And how much populating and polluting are each of us entitled to? Should we all be driving? I think we all should have converted to hybrid cars 20 years ago, and all electric hybrid if possible, but electric hybrids. And I'm hypocritical in that I still enjoy my high-powered Mercedes convertible.
Yeah, it's a nice car. I've seen it.
There have been so many technical issues just in terms of inventing the technology and now scaling the technology. Getting enough electrical power from sustainable sources is just now becoming realistic. And as the demand for electricity goes up, the capacity is going up too. And government hasn't really been as fast as they could be. But if you look at places like Germany, China, where they've really made a commitment, you see the grid can grow really fast.
Hey,
absolutely true.
Yes.
And then we also have to confront the big picture on how much ownership of all of our energy resources do we want in private, corporate, for-profit, greedy hands like PG&E, and which should have been taken over by the California government 20 years ago when they had mismanaged themselves into bankruptcy.
Yeah,
well, you know, the whole thing of the electrical, when you study the history of electricity, it started out as local smart guys, inventors, understanding electricity, putting it into their neighborhood, then getting hired to put it in on the municipal level in their town, then that getting absorbed by a bigger regional electric utility, that getting absorbed by something bigger going statewide and then all the way to multi-state monopolies.
Correct, smart lady.
Yeah.
And what happened, in fact, I'm an expert on the whole history of PG&E and what you refer to.
Mm-hmm.
Brief, PG&E's founders in the 20s and the 30s gobbled up all those smart, efficient, local focus to serve their community electric power transmitting companies.
Just showing how bad centralized government is, even when it's a business.
There's an interesting 3,500-page history of PG&E. I may have a copy somewhere. And the point is, corporate, executive, stockholder, investor greed dominated. Now, one example of why what you say is correct is Sacramento Power and Light avoided being gobbled up by the PG&E creators. And as a municipal power company, I know them well, they operate 25 to 70% more efficient than PG&E, by the way, because they don't have the profit and the executive compensations, et cetera, and the stockholders' demands for dividends.
Yeah, right. So behooves us to study what they're doing so that we can avoid this mess with PG&E.
Take PG&E over. Their value is greatly reduced because of their own mismanagement, by the way, and their greed focus. They didn't do the cleanup near their towers. That's why those fires were caused. They cut corners. Their prior CEO went back to Wall Street.
But Colonel Terry
is the reason.
Let's do a special show on that. But we've got some.
Right now, we want to keep our focus on the heights. We're going to the soaring 20s here. We're looking up. So let's do that.
It's not going to be sore either.
Like making cooperative and state government and federal-owned power is one of the big-term improvements that we can do.
All right. Okay, I like it. Let's get the right people in charge.
We're realistic about global population and recognize the reality and confront it as an honestly dialogued, considered opportunity.
Yeah, it's something we can do, too.
Pregnancy prevention to the third world, frankly, my dear.
Okay. Okay. You have quite an agenda for 2020.
And we should also be demanding we want a government that's honest and, if you will, is fully exposed more so, both federally and locally.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
Okay. And we should also focus on eating healthy, converting off of beef, which I haven't done yet, and more vegetarian. I'm sure you're in favor of that, my dear.
Absolutely. In fact, check out the Impossible Burger Stock Beyond, B-Y-N-D, right?
Beyond meat.
The best stocks of 2019 were vegetarian alternatives to meat.
The projections show that they'll grow, that the novel vegan meat replacement is going to grow by leaps and bounds.
Well, I've tried some of that category, and it's been excellent. I couldn't tell the difference.
Yeah, there you go. You see, so that's what the meat industry is so concerned about. It. They've hired a hitman to try to get people back to meat.
Smear it.
Yeah.
We're going to have to spell meat in a whole new way.
Yeah.
Probably like M-E-Y-T or something, you know? All right, Colonel Terry. Well, thank you for your cheer, your 2020 resolutions for all of us.
I have an aged friend who's 97 in Virginia. I check on her, and she served as an Army nurse and volunteered for combat area assignments and all that in World War II, okay? Had very interesting perspectives, et cetera. Very wise lady. And I pointed out my concerns about Trump and my concerns about the Democrats having no candidates who could win.
Oh,
and
yeah. This is going to be a real faith walk, this next one. Anyway, we want to get back to space. Is that okay?
Secondly, my 97-year-old wise lady said, Terry, our country can prevail over all of these difficulties as we've done before.
Oh, yeah.
I totally agree. It's in our hearts.
Too much good stuff going on.
Spirit of liberty. We are.
Well, happy, prosperous, harmonious New Year to us all.
Thank you.
Yes. Thank you, Colonel Terry. You too.
You'll stay beautiful, Mrs. Future.
Oh, thanks. Okay. Happy 2020.
So, yes, in terms of solutions, there's going to be an experimental solution in Las Vegas this year.
Oh, do tell.
Yes.
What's happening?
The Boring Company, B-O-R-I-N-G.
Oh, one of my favorites.
They're completing their first commercial tunnel in Las Vegas that goes from the Las Vegas Convention Center to the Strip.
Hmm. Oh, that's quite a corridor. Yeah, there's some pretty gnarly traffic on those streets.
Oh, I have many times gone between the Convention Center and the Strip.
Yeah, so on Flamingo, on Tropicana, those long lights. Ugh. Well, hopefully it's not too expensive to jump on the public transportation.
Well, they'll have underground tunnels that will transport people in pods. passenger pods, and allow commuters to bypass traffic and get around cities faster. They can even have cars in these tunnels as well. Hmm. And so when it's completed, it will be two tunnels, each about a mile long. Passengers will be transported initially by autonomous vehicles at 155 miles an hour.
Hmm. Very interesting.
So that's coming in. And traffic congestion is a huge issue.
Yeah.
For much of the planet as we get more and more into personal transport.
Right. Yeah.
And these autonomous vehicles actually reduce the amount of traffic that are out there because people will be able to basically call up a taxi, autonomous taxis, from their phones as this technology matures.
Okay. So when is that tunnel being completed?
It'll probably be about a year before they actually have stuff. They're hoping to have it for Consumer Electronics Show 2021.
Oh, boy. So.
They have a demonstration, which is always in January.
Okay, so that's a year from now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that'll be the big thing then.
Okay.
So that's something to look forward to. I think it'd be a good solution here. You know, we get Highway 1 is always crowded going towards Aptos.
And there's no more width for new lanes.
No, so let's go underneath it.
So we can just go underneath.
Right. Hmm. Right. I don't know why it's so hard for people to think that way, but these tunnels can be done very quickly. They've got the boring machines.
Well, this is an earthquake zone, honey. You don't want to necessarily assume that it's easy to tunnel under everything.
These things have been pioneered in earthquake zones. The first one was in Hawthorne, California.
Mm-hmm.
And also earthquakes are no stranger to this kind of thinking. That's going to be exciting, and that's coming out. Also, as I was mentioning with Colonel Terry, Beyond Meat and Impossible Burgers are taking a more and more of a large piece of the pie for meat, and they're vegetarian-based meat substitutes that are gaining popularity. And this will tremendously affect the ecosystem because of the huge amount of land and crops and side effects that we experience from having so many cows,
mm-hmm.
from having so millions and millions of cows that we kill every year.
Right.
And no longer would have to do that.
More plants, less cow farts.
Yeah.
Good for the planet.
And the methane is not really great for the atmosphere either. So we're seeing a tremendous
growth. And we still get to eat burgers guilt-free.
Yeah, the projections are that by 2030, 18% of the meat market will be the novel vegan meat replacement, and about 10% cultured meat, where we're growing meat not from killing cows, but from growing stem cells of cows
mm-hmm.
to create meat. If you want a steak, you just grow a steak.
Mm.
You know, and you don't have to kill an animal to do that. So that's pretty cool. Okay, so the next hour, we're talking to Randy Masters. Hopefully, we'll have him on the line here, and he'll be talking to us about a whole other topic, the intersection of music and geometry and sound healing and related topics. So we'll be back right after the news. This is the Dr. and Mrs. Fuchsia Show. Thanks for listening, and Happy New Year!